Hi there, this is Catherine. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Digital Marketing Victories podcast. Before we get into this month's episode, I just want to share with you the ways that you can support the podcast if you're finding the episodes helpful. You can send me a donation at buymeacoffee.com/DMVpodcast. Any and all level of donation would be very much appreciated. Help me offset the cost of producing the podcast. I'd also encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter so that you don't miss a future episode or any other news about the podcast. And to do that, you go to wostrategies.com/newsletter. Okay, on with our episode.
Welcome to the Digital Marketing Victories podcast, a podcast about the realities of digital marketing. Listen in each month to learn about the tactics and strategies, soft skills, and technical requirements that go into digital marketing success. I'm Catherine Watsier-Ong, owner of WO Strategies LLC, an organic traffic consultancy.
And I'm Jim Keeney, owner of Federal Web Consulting and founder of DAP, the platform for the engagement economy. Welcome. Let's get into it and celebrate our victories. For this episode, we have as our guest Javier von Westphalen, founder of Emergent Element, a multicultural marketing strategy consultancy. Javier shares his experience working with companies to define and launch marketing campaigns targeting the Latinx community. Going back to when he was 17 and working on designs for brands like Coca-Cola and Datsun, Javier has taken his love of storytelling to help companies truly reach Latinx community. This episode couldn't be more timely. The purchasing power of the Latinx community in America grows every year, exceeding $1.5 trillion in 2018. This is a significant incentive, but as we learned in the most recent election, marketing to the community is not simple. Treating the Latinx community as one homogeneous group or simply translating your current marketing will not be effective. The Latinx community is a unique and diverse community requiring a different approach and mastering different channels. Listen as Javier takes you through the unique landscape of Latinx marketing. If you are just starting out with multicultural marketing or planning the launch of a Latinx initiative, this is the episode for you. So, Javier, you have been working in the field of multicultural marketing for a while now. How did you get involved in that aspect of marketing?
Well, actually, it's been quite a year, actually, probably was about 17. 17 years, yeah, actually. Yeah, I got a degree in graphic designs, and my first job was working at Macan Peru, Macan Ericsson Peru. So I loved stories, I love video, I love the idea of creating that. And that's the way actually I got into marketing. And then my accounts were Coca-Cola, Colinos, which is a toothpaste, Garza Real, which actually was a beer that were coming in, and then Datsun before it became Nissan.
Very first car was a Datsun.
Part of that experience was kind of interesting with Datsun and Coca-Cola because they were international brands.
Right.
And one of the things at the moment that light my the bulb up was that the idea of doing international marketing was for New York to develop the story and then send it to different countries for them to kind of adapt it, mainly do a translation in Spanish. But the context of the story didn't make any sense.
Right.
Because, for example, this ad commercial was very happy. Everybody, all the youth was happy. They were singing, they were laughing. They were stuck in a nice, like an LA highway, like a five-lane highway, right? They were stuck in traffic, and then they get out of their car, they go to a pickup, jump into the back of the pickup in the bed, and start playing the piano, and the party started.
Yeah.
Now, if you are in Peru, you go back into the pickup someone, you start a fight. It didn't make any sense. There's nothing happy about it. So, but the start of it actually got me thinking on how do brands really target different countries. I mean, it's just, although you're an international brand and although the theme was that all teenagers behave the same and have the same kind of aspiration, which I disagree, Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to market with one message.
Right.
And that got me into this role where I started thinking about, wait a minute, you know, we're not relating. We're not talking. We're missing the mark. Yeah, it's Coca-Cola. It's a nice brand. It's happy. Yes, that's the spirit. But we're not reaching the audience, or you're being criticized because you are not understanding the context of where people are living in. And then my creative director, when I challenged that, says, you know, you better start marketing. You get out of the graphic design part of it. And
so what led you to Emergent Elements? Your new company.
After working for private labels, I was, you know, on like Little Caesars and other companies. I came to DC and I started working in social marketing. And I did that for about 15 years. And I decided that I wanted to jump ship and try this new venture, actually, try to be my own boss and get into the startup space. And one thing that got me to that or motivated me that was the fact that we only were doing one part of marketing, which was designing communications, marketing communications, but not really looking at other aspects or other barriers of the audience we wanted to serve.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So in, I am a creative part. I am a creative person. But a marketer by heart.
Yeah.
Right. And marketer by heart means actually looking at the different pieces. It's just not one aspect of it. It's really looking at the different segments of how you create an experience, how you tell the story, how you connect with people. What experience are you creating?
So to do that, do you launch focus groups with your target audience? So the different demographics, you can get a handle on what motivates them or what fears they might have that hold them back from adopting.
Yeah, research. Audience research definitely actually it has to be implemented. And it is probably is not only just talking about on focus groups, is one-on-one interviews, going and getting embedded in the community and looking at them, listening to them, observing. Right. It is trying to find out what are the real desires and what are the key challenge or key behavior change you want to make, and how is that you can create something or tell a story, right, that will fit into their lives. And not only that, but also accomplish what they wanted to actually accomplish. So it's not me telling them to do what it is. It is me helping them to be what they want to be, or helping them go where they want to go.
And that's a big challenge, though, right? Because a lot of people come to multicultural marketing as, oh, well, we have a bunch of customers that are Latinx or, you know, whatever it might be. Oh, we need to do marketing for them. And it's kind of a superficial approach. Yeah. So talk to how you help a company kind of figure out, you know, how to define themselves with respect to this new set of customers and potentially this new customer segment.
Well, I follow a human-centered design approach, which actually is looking and really seeking to understand the consumer, defining a specific area that is worth focusing on and that actually have a barrier for a desired outcome. Then brainstorming ideas, looking at what it is that how is that we can help them, right? So it's bringing, you know, creating ideas from stories to probably service changes to other type of areas, and we can have stories about that, and then help them, you know, create a plan from a strategy for do that.
Do you have a way, because you've worked with a really big brand, so do you have a formula for how you execute that on scale? Because I've historically worked with big brands. I've also definitely pointed out international campaigns that seemed tone deaf in my life. I'm just kind of, I've suggested, for instance, Google surveys for some people. And I'm just wondering what your process is. Like, how do you help them execute that without, or maybe you do, maybe you book face-to-face back before COVID, face-to-face interviews in different cities, like around the US, for instance. Is there something else that you do that might help execute that on scale?
having interviews with probably community influencers. But by community influencer, I'm not talking about the Instagram influencer of the day right now, like the hot shot, shiny object that everybody follows. No, I'm talking about people who actually live in the community, people that actually are working day to day and getting part of their insight, talking to the consumers, right? Or to actually, I hate that word consumer, to the people you want to serve, right? Their two words is really ticking me off. One is that using the person consumers because it takes the humanity out of it. In the over influencing, it is, that sounds such a manipulative word. So it is, I prefer inspire, right? Ignite. Anyway, and listening to them, really.
When you work with the leadership of the company, though, you know, when you start an engagement, are they tone deaf? Are they, you know, how do you bridge that process to help them understand the full nature of the journey and to really begin to, because you're not only helping them kind of reach an audience, but you're also helping them think about the engagement of a customer, consumer, community, inspiring, resonance with their, you know, with their users and the people who they connect with. You're helping them kind of understand how important that, you know, that true resonance is to sustainable markets.
Well, and sometimes find budget to talk to these folks that they hadn't planned on doing or spending. That's the part I'm curious about. Like, how did you convince people to do these user interviews? And how did you figure out a way to do it in a budget-friendly way if they hadn't previously been thinking about doing it?
Well, I cannot help them solve the problem if I don't really understand the problem. See, that's a big assumption that most people make, right? We want to get here at the end. We want to sell a product. We want to attract this consumer. And we already know, based on literature, or what I have heard, or what somebody sells on my staff, what the cultural values are. So therefore, let's go implement this. But do you really listen to the customer? So how is that I can help you if we don't really know what the problem is? And that's part of the innovation side of it, right? It is... Okay, we might assume, I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to give you an example of a campaign that happened this in 2017. We might assume that this is what the customer needs, right? And it might not. So we don't know really what problem we're solving for them. And that's a starting question. If they don't want to engage in that way, then how effective or how truly they're going to get into the community or actually, you know, win their hearts and be able to actually influence behavioral change, which actually at the end is what they want to do. Now, an example I'm going to give you is that a campaign that we ran with CDC was the Zika virus campaign in 2017. It was an epidemic. It was a really emergency. I don't know if you remember this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Zika virus. Okay. It was an epidemic. It was a really urgent a campaign that we needed to work in. And the hotspot was Puerto Rico. Now, Puerto Rico is an island, okay? And it was an emerging campaign, you have a model of communicating, right? Which is you tell people what there is, what's happening. You tell them what are you doing, why it is important, and two or three actions that they can do to prevent it, right? So you have in control, you create that sense of control, this sense of comfort. This is happening, this is really terrific, this is gonna impact you, it's gonna impact your baby. This is what we're doing actually to minimize the effect. And this is why it's important, and this is what you need to do. So it was such a fast campaign that when we got contracted, when we teamed with CDC, we had 2 weeks to hit the ground running. So in 2 weeks, we created everything. We had a previous research company that I was doing research with them that actually shared this insight with us. And we went into production mode and launch. And then nothing happens. We get silence. Right? So it says, okay, we need to go back and we need to see what is really going on. Now, we learned, right, and we completely forgot that Puerto Rico is an island. Mm. that people have been living with mosquitoes since they actually were born. That the message that they were hearing is something that actually has been tuned deaf, that has been tuned to them, right? Since they were 5 years old. So it's not a new song. And what happened when there is not a new song, it goes back to the, you know, to be a surround sound, to be a
background noise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Background noise.
Yeah, background noise.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's tone deaf.
Yeah.
That's one. The second part of it is the context of where they were living. There was an economic and social crisis in Puerto Rico. So this was the least part of what they were thinking about every morning of the day. And what we need to find out, what we find out is not that they knew, they were actually get upset. It's like, I know what I need to do. What I need from you is to help me remind me, because I don't want, this will not be top of mind. So our switch and our campaign completely changed. Instead of saying, you know, this is what you need to do, is okay, let's create a story. We'll actually, and our strategy will remind you of the behaviors that you need to take to be able to prevent the disease or get it. And that was a complete disruption. So what the problem we were solving was not the knowledge, right? That was an assumption that we did. Well, the problem that we needed to solve is, how do we remind them that this is a daily behavior that they can do, like just washing their teeth to prevent a terrible disease?
Wow. Yeah, it's... And often it comes down to that, right? You know, the first orientation is, oh, they don't have the information. But when we actually dig underneath it, what we do find is it's a behavior change. I used to face this all the time in financial services, you know, working with people on retirement and investing is, you know, everybody was trying to educate them more. Well, they were educated out. 30 years of education had not made any change whatsoever. And so you end up realizing, no, what has to happen is it has to be a behavior change. And a behavior change involves this kind of constant and continuous engagement.
Right. Yeah. It is a long term, and that is the other aspect, specifically in cultural marketing, and specifically with the Latino community, is companies treating a strategy like a political campaign,
right?
Getting in and getting out just when they want it, which doesn't create any benefit. They need to think about long term. It is establishing a relationship with the community, showing themselves that they are actually interested. And remember, like, the Latino culture is outward thinking. It's not inner thinking, right? It's not about me. It is about us. Mm-hmm. So if a brand actually wants to target, he wants to actually engage with it, it is a long-term commitment. It is someone that actually you're going to get in, and they can show that actually they're really interested in, a brand is interested in the community, interested in the people they want to actually to reach. If you're in and out, it's a utilitarian.
It's like the distinction between grass tops and grassroots. You really have to be engaged in the community over the long term. And I think that's a marketing trend in general. And we see that very much on the digital side is, you know, the first way that people come to digital marketing is they're like, oh, we'll just pay and we'll put ads in there. But right. the successful campaigns are the ones where they're actually providing value to a community and they actually understand the community at some deep level rather than on a superficial level.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You earn the right to talk to them.
Yeah.
Particularly right. Joe Frenner talked about that in our Reddit episode about how, particularly on Reddit, where it's all anonymous, people can be very blunt. And so you can't go in and just push. You have to actually engage in the community, be a community member, that kind of thing. Long-term commitment. Yeah.
Well, and can you touch on the fact that, you know, naive people look at the Latinx community as one big community, but you and I both know that, well, I don't know. So, but there's a big difference between the Puerto Rican community and the Mexican community and the Cuban community, et cetera. Can you talk to that and tell me how you work with clients to help them understand those nuances and differences?
Well, yeah. In that sense, we need to actually clarify and define who are we targeting with, who actually we're trying to reach out. Because like you said, in the Latino community, we not only have different cultural backgrounds, if you will, we have, you know, different countries that have their own aspects and cultures, but also we have acculturation levels. We have the first generation, the second generation, third and fourth generation, which actually they have assimilated some of the, you know, the American values, but it's still conserve some of the Latino values. It's, and their experiences are completely different. And add to that, depends on the state that you live in. So, for example,
Arizona versus Florida.
Arizona versus Florida. Arizona versus Atlanta.
Yeah.
Or California versus Baltimore. Right? Not only the demographic changes, but also the social infrastructures and helps that you have and networks that you have already established.
Right. Right.
So does this mean you create a persona for each of those as a way to focus everybody about how different the different groups are? So if you were doing a US campaign, you might create 15 different Latinx personas because of how distinctly different they are?
No, we will look at one market actually we should target best. What actually will be the, you know, high return of investment?
Oh, so you just focus on one.
We can probably focus on a region, or we can focus on different states as markets. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a complete, let me stop here and gather my thoughts. So a national campaign, for example, it doesn't mean that I'm targeting the 52 states. Right. A national campaign means I'm targeting selective states where our audience, or the audience you want to reach, will bring you the highest return of investment. This doesn't mean that, for example, that it will be California, Texas, and Florida, where actually, you know, probably 60% of the population, 70% of the Latino population live. It could be a completely different if you are actually targeting first generation Latinos, right? Where they are and what are their needs. And then you develop different type of campaigns.
I just asked them because I've worked on a variety of public service and federal websites that are national, and they just translate.
Yeah,
the whole nation. That's why I was asking.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, one of the beauty of digital is that you could be very selective and very targeted. And the price of customization for a persona is not as expensive as you will be doing broadcast. Right. When you're doing mass media, before on that, I mean, if you develop 3 TV commercials, if you will, for different regions, then you were customizing it for the region. But then again, you know, it is broadcast. So you're talking to the average number, if you will. And we know the average number, people don't buy average numbers.
Becomes background noise again, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think you said something earlier, which is kind of critical, which is in the Latinx community, that involvement in the community is the place where it starts. And so, you know, there's a different willingness or acceptance, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a different willingness and acceptance for that kind of generic marketing that, you know, targets an average person. They really want to see much more involvement in the community, I think.
Yes, I agree. I mean, yes, definitely. I mean, there you have different levels of communications and different levels of how you tell the story. So those aspects need to be taken into consideration. That, so, you know, three elements, like I talked at the beginning, is telling a story, creating a relationship, right, and designing an experience. Now, how those three elements combine in each other into your strategy? It's just not about telling the story.
So a lot of the space that I'm in is people proactively going to Google to search for something. So I have a burning question. You just talked about how very different these communities are across the nation. Is the Spanish radically different? Would they literally be Googling stuff that's different? So you might have to maybe label it differently in Spanish in order for them to find it. Like, is the Puerto Rican Spanish radically different than the Spanish being spoken in Atlanta?
They're idiomatic, yes. And how they use the Spanish, yes, it's Spanish, right? It's like the difference between England and United States English, right, or Ireland. You have an accent. You have certain modisms that actually are common to the culture, are common to the place. The language is the same. Now, yes, I will have to say that if you are searching for something, for a term, they might use a term that they are used to, they're used to how to talk.
Right, right. Because I saw that when I was in Australia, I was floored by, I forget what it was, rent and lease or something. But the term they used was not the term that we used here in the US. There were quite a few moments like that where I was like, what are they talking about? You know, it's still mm-hmm. English, but they use a completely different term. So how many of those variants are happening here in the US? How many different, I guess, I don't know if you call them slang terms, but is it 5 in the US or 10?
You got me.
Utterly curious.
you got me. See, the thing is, with when we use actually search, with the strategy for search, right? You use about the intent.
Right. It is about the intent, which is why the slang would matter.
You look at what you're trying to find out. For example, one of the things that, and this is, you know, and even, or two things, is not even related to what they are going, for example, I'm formulating my thoughts here.
Sure, sure.
One of the things that we would do, right, is just not only looking at the specific term be so straightforward, right? So if we're saying you're looking for vaccine, flu vaccine, I'll just give you an example, okay? Flu vaccine. Usually you're looking for, you know, flu symptoms, those kind of things. But what is really the Latino population looking at on their lives? And how that, what search and they're using, what search terms are they using to find information? Maybe condoms, maybe sex. Maybe they're looking at other aspects that are important to them. So we combine both things.
Uh-huh.
So it will appear, the message will appear, not for a direct search, like I want to know the flu symptoms. But they might be looking for how to better rest, how to actually have a better sleep.
So overall health.
Exactly.
But from their perspective. That's interesting because that is kind of a fundamental cultural difference. So years ago, I came up with a whole thing where, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, it's generally understood that there are cultures that are much more kind of oral based and others that are more literature based. So Northern mm-hmm. European, Northern Western European. And so, you know, I kind of thought about that and it didn't really describe it for me well enough until what I stumbled upon was what I said was transactive versus interactive cultures. And Northern Western European is transactive. And the foundation of the interaction is a contract. And its terms and definition, whereas interactive, the foundation of all of the engagement is the community and the relationship. So, mm-hmm. you know, in Latinx communities, you know, sit down, have lunch, get to know each other, et cetera. And then only then do you start to transact the business aspects of it. And that's been, you know, it's kind of simplistic, but it's been a very good kind of way for me to understand how this works. And so, you know, generally the Latinx community tends to be much more interactive and less transactive. And so what right. you're saying is they're not, you know, if you think from a transactive, it's like, I have the flu, let me go find a solution to the flu. Whereas an interactive is, well, you know, I have a health issue. And where in my community can I find information about health issues? And, oh, it turns out that's all, you know, while looking for this, that's also where I want to find out about flu shots. And I also want to find out about, you know, COVID-19 or what have you. And so that's a kind of a fundamentally different way of looking at the world.
So circling that's back around this, like.
I'm sorry, Catherine. Actually, go I ahead. Want to add to that. Because yeah. there's a fundamental thing, actually, how you tell the stories as well. Because it's community versus individualism, right? It's not right. a utilitarian message. It is a value message. So when you're creating stories, that the ones actually they are best suited and have a better affinity with Latino is that part of it. It is not saying today is the special and this is, you know, what I'm getting for 99 cents is this breakfast with bacon. And no, it is, oh, look, my kid is working at this restaurant and, you know, and this is fantastic because this is a stage of life that we need to celebrate.
Gotcha.
Right? It is a different way of presenting the story.
So, sorry, circling back around to persuading your clients to become closer to their target audience, which I think is the essential thing here that I'm really holding on to. Now, for you, you're a member of the community. So I'm assuming when you have a conversation with these clients, they just kind of nod and go, okay, yeah, you're more of an expert in this community than I am, and I believe you, and okay, I'll let you talk to them, maybe. For those of us who are not a member of this community, I try really hard sometimes when clients want me to market to another country. And I'm like, I don't know. Let's go talk to them. But it's hard to persuade. So do you have a set of resources that you or research that you point to that says that, okay, if you want to target that community, you have to be on Snapchat or they are not interested in a vaccine message or whatever. Is there a set of places that you could point the rest of us to get our clients to go, oh yeah, okay, I do need to talk to the target audience?
Well, for secondary research, yeah, they have, you know, usually go to Hispanic Pew, eMarketer, you know, which will give you a broad overview of media habits, Nielsen, mainly here in the US. eMarketer is good, actually. They have research for US as well as Latin America, which can give you a very overview of, you know, media usage and some of the sentiments. US Hispanic Pew is a great source for demographic change, a pulse for a general, for the community itself, not specifically for an area of the community, but for, let's say, the United States itself, how they are feeling, what it is, their sentiments are. So it can give you a little bit of a guidance, a notch on what is happening, what they're thinking, what.
Because at times, even I had a client where literally I was their target audience and I still had to point them to research to get them to, you know. So anyway, that's why I asked the question. Like, how do you get the client to be like, you think the you other, know what you're talking about, well, but that audience is not necessarily jiving with you or they have a different background or whatever.
Right. Yeah. A good way to do this, actually, as a matter of fact, if they're willing to, is doing an affinity workshop.
Yeah, an
empathy workshop. Where actually you walk the clients to, you know, you bring some expertise to listen to, right? Well, there are many ways to do this, but one it is actually you can bring the experts or people the community to talk to and listen and ask questions, and then go and do a empathy graph that is, you know, what they think, what they said, what they do, right? And gather those thoughts. And from that, compare to what they were thinking. So trying to see the difference between what they have heard, what they think they say, what they think they do, and what they're feeling to what they were thinking.
I just got it. It's like the 8-second test for websites, except with messaging. You show it really quick and then you take it away and you go, who owned the website? What do they do? Do you care? You know, those kind of immediate questions.
Right.
Similar.
Right. Yeah, similar.
Yeah, and in psychology, it's called difference checking, where, you know, and that's actually one of the tricks is you can say, okay, so you thought they loved your brand on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, where do you fall? Oh, I thought they were an 8. And then you go to somebody else who was in the exact same session and you say, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, where, oh, it's a 5. Okay, now why do you say 8 and why do you say 5? And that's when the real conversation begins to happen. Because now somebody says, well, you know, they were a 5 because didn't you notice that the person on the left kept pulling back every time you talked about the product? And the other person's like, no, I didn't notice that. And now you start to have the substantive conversations that get underneath the surface. And so you call that affinity?
Affinity, and it's a combination of empathy and affinity
workshop. Okay. So it really starts for you with the interviews and the face-to-face and the engagement with actual people, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm Latino, first generation. I go through the same kind of experiences, my experiences. Doesn't mean that they are the same experiences that other people have actually gone through.
Yeah.
Right. I can sympathize with them. I can, am I able to understand because they go probably some certain or similar circumstances, but they're not me.
Right.
You, I, and Kathy don't have the same values and beliefs and experiences and knowledge. And it will be very arrogant for me just because I work with the community saying, I know.
Right.
And I know you. What I need to look at is like, I can see you. I can listen to you. And then I can help find what you're not saying, help find what it is, the problem that you want to solve to get where you want to get.
Well, and that's the core arrogance that needs to be addressed from corporate leadership, right? Which is, well, if I just put the right words on paper or on the social media post or what have you, that's it. And, you know, if I translate it into Spanish, that'll be okay. And what you're saying is that, number one, you know, don't do it casually. It's got to be a strategic choice because you've got to be in it for the long haul. And number two, it's a very diverse and complex community. Therefore, you know, start trying to figure out exactly what your intent is, what you're trying to do. Go out to specific communities that you want to have engagement with because of the ROI implied. And now find out what they actually think as opposed to what you think they think.
Well, but also he mentioned the pain point, which I think is really important. That's what drives people to search, right? They've got a problem in their head and you can't assume you know what their problem is. I think that's the gist of it, is that where the problem and your product intersect, that's where you need to be marketing, right? And you don't know what their problem is unless you talk to them, especially if they're that diverse.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So what is the desire? I mean, you know, and there comes the difference. I mean, the desire of a first generation Latino who has been here for 5 years to the desire of someone who has been here for 20 years has completely changed.
Yeah.
Right. Or have been born here. So that changed. And the experience is different. They might want a car. Now, why they want a car? What's the resources? What problems they're solving them? You know, if they buy something, what people will say about it?
Yeah.
So all those aspects take into consideration. The other one, it is looking at their barriers. You know, for example, in something that this just happened. We didn't even think about it. I mean, I have a client who actually is a nonprofit organization, LEAF, and it's a Latino Education Advancement Fund. And what the director does is advise and coach first generation parents, Spanish speaking parents, navigate the U.S. school system. Now, her process or her approach is do one-on-one workshops and one-on-one consulting face-to-face because that is more comfortable for the community. Now, with COVID, everything had to change, right? Everything he needed the people to be online. So one of the tools that we are more comfortable using with, right, all of us, is Zoom and Invite. Our assumption was that the community, because they are smartphone savvy, right, they will be able to figure it out or be able to use it. Wrong. Because they use smartphones for the different purposes.
Hmm.
Right. They use more than broadband, they use smartphones. But they use it for the different purposes. And they have never been exposed to these tools, Zoom and Invite. So one of the barriers was, well, we need to educate them.
Yeah.
They want to participate. The interest is there. The demand is there. Problem was, they don't know how to use the tools.
So did you keep it on Zoom or did you find another video sharing platform they were using?
No.
FaceTime or something?
The thing is, they were not using any video platform. They were using, and if they use a video platform, will be WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Right? But WhatsApp doesn't actually allow you to run a nice conversation, a nice meeting with a group. And it breaks down a lot when actually it's a large group. So the first phase of that is, okay, let's educate the community on how to do this, the step by step, walk them through.
Well, we're going to be Zooming for a while, probably. So it's really good that you're educating them anyway. Then they can participate in all sorts of Zooms everywhere.
Oh, wait, the vaccine is coming. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The vaccine is coming.
At least another however long.
So you provided a critical community service right there. I've gotten to the point where I'll Zoom my son who's in the basement.
So talk to me about these different, I'm completely ignorant about how to market to the Latinx community. I'll admit that, though I've looked at some research intermittently. But so what are the social media platforms that they hang out on? We've talked about WhatsApp, though I don't know what you can do with WhatsApp as a marketer because it's chatting back and forth, right?
Well, they're already actually on Facebook, you know, Facebook for trying to monetize any platform.
Right.
Changing the algorithm. You have created a new one. Well, actually, it is WhatsApp for Business. Oh. And WhatsApp for Business, you are able to do send ads. But this is the thing is, it is WhatsApp is the email for the Latino market.
Yep.
Right. So 3% of Latinos in general use, this is on average, right? 3% of Latinos usually use email for communications. They're more text oriented, more voice oriented, more social media oriented. So top platforms that use social media is Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. I mean, video is a huge thing. Mm. YouTube, but go Google search, right? And WhatsApp. And WhatsApp, the index, and you mentioned this, Jim, WhatsApp, the index, twice the general population on usage. So they are 52% of their time on, you know, it's 20, let me back this, 52% versus 21%.
Wow.
Of usage of time using WhatsApp. Yeah.
So with something like WhatsApp, you said it's like email. It seems to me that then what you're trying to do is build up subscription lists, right? You're trying to get people to voluntarily allow you to broadcast to them. Is that how you handle it? Is that how you market?
Nope. No. I mean, if you do that, you'll be background noise.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Because they're already getting inundated with Facebook. They're already getting inundated with a lot of ads that, you know, the WhatsApp platform it is to be able to create a group or affinity group or engagement.
Okay.
Right. So it's a conversation.
Okay.
They will, how can I say this? Thinking about this, it is, you are a guest when they engage with you, right? And it is, so how it is that you're going to be able to continue be invited into the party.
Gotcha.
Right? And be a great, not host, but guest. So what stories you tell, how you're going to communicate, how are you going to help, how are you, you know, answer if they have a question. And this interaction doesn't have to be every day. The interaction has to be there. It has to have a purpose and an intent. You said it. It is about creating value.
Does the cost of engagement go up dramatically, or have you found systems to be able to do that level of engagement at roughly the same resource requirements as other forms of engagement with other
communities? Asking about scale. Like, how do you do this at scale? Or can you do it at scale? That's actually my biggest question. Can you even do it at scale?
You can do it at scale. I mean, WhatsApp, it's a general platform. You create a group and you create a number. And you do it great. I mean, the thing is that you need to show up and be present.
Mm. And consistent. Got it. And then the quality and value of what you're doing then becomes critical because you want them to keep coming back, right?
Correct. So you become, what's up is becoming a resource. Like I said, we're friends.
Yeah.
We are guests.
Yeah.
And then that's the way you engage with them. You keep inviting people.
Yeah.
People will, and this is the beauty of it, right? if you become a resource, you become a friend that they value, they will talk about you. And they will tell other people about you.
Gotcha.
They will share that information about you. Now, you know that Latinos talk 20 times more about brands than the general market.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. So that is a key component.
So once you've actually done the legwork and gotten the community and become part of it, the stickiness is much greater. Is that what that implies?
Right. Unless you're valuable. In and out.
Yeah. Unless you're in well, out. Well, that's the consistency element, right?
Exactly.
Is, you know, if you show up and you provide this value on a consistent basis, mm-hmm. once you're actually established, the, you know, the loyalty to your brand and the ability to spread via word of mouth, you know, quote unquote, is significantly higher. So that's an interesting, because, you know, because many brands are struggling with the fact that in the general population as a whole, stickiness has gone out the window. People are just like, yeah, well, if you're not doing anything for me today, forget it.
But still, this sounds like a process challenge, though, because most marketers, say you're in-house, you've got multiple channels, usually everybody's too stretched. And so you're using like Hootsuite to pre-schedule or something else to pre-schedule. So you've pre-thought about your message and you push. This sounds like you actually need to show up and talk, perhaps.
Yeah, it's more like webinars.
Exactly.
It's more like a webinar. Exactly. Which is a lot more of a lift. You're not pre-scheduling anything.
Right. So it's not a push message, which I do not negate, right? Developing your message and set it up and then schedule it up and send it to actually to be top of mind, something that actually is valuable. This is more of a building a relationship part with the community, an engagement part with the community, and listening to them. You know, there are a couple of values of that. One, it is that you become a trusted advisor, right? You become, they see that the brand or the company or whoever it is that wants to serve is active and with them virtually, but they are. Second, it is you gather great insights.
Yeah, the listening part.
When they trust you, right, they start speaking about not only the problem you're trying to solve, X problems that they're going through their lives. Right. So it is a great research tool, it's a great listening tool, a great connection tool.
So if the community is chat-based, does that mean that Facebook Messenger is more used by the community as well, or is it just Facebook?
Is there are two parts of it, actually. Is Facebook groups, mm-hmm. right? It is used by the community. Facebook Feed is used by the community a lot. And now, if you go to Latin America, there are other, you know, WhatsApp's still being used, but there are other chats that they might be more local, more.
Yes, this is the story I'm always telling. Like, if you want to be found in South Korea, it's Naver. It's not Google. It changes rapidly depending on the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, for search engines, I mean, Google is all over Latin America. That's no problem. But for text messages, there might be other platforms that I have. You know, I don't know, because I'm not at this moment.
I worked on a global campaign. It was they were targeting South Korea, and they were just doing Google, and they were just doing. And I spent all this time digging up the research about in that country. It's actually X, Y, and Z, and this one is X, Y, and Z.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that gets us back to your first point, which is if you sit down and actually talk to them, you'll find that out right away.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
You know, it's a simple question. Well, what social media platforms do you use? I mean, that's the way we would phrase it, but it'll be slightly different depending on the country. And
but
the
also, how are you using social media?
Exactly.
That is the other part of it. I mean, so.
Yeah, my experience with that is, you know, I work with developers in China, and it's a completely different landscape. For one thing, Google is blocked. So, you know, the one time I visited, you know, when you land, your phone stops working, which is fascinating because, you know, I've become very dependent on Google Maps and I can't read Absolutely. The signs. and the only alternative was Baidu, and Baidu is everything's in Chinese. So I found myself in the middle of Chengdu once, completely lost with no way of getting back and no phone.
And you cannot just Google Translator either. So
completely lost. Luckily, I figured it out, but and I was, you know, like five blocks away from the hotel, but still.
So I have a question, because you were talking about generations, and my husband is actually a second generation from Indonesia. Mm-hmm. So how often are you finding the generational, whether it's first generation or second generation, would impact, again, coming back to the Google stuff that I spent a lot of time on, who is Googling? So do they find maybe the Spanish is so atrocious here in the US on websites that they have like their parents Google for, or I mean the kids Google for the parents? Do you get into that with the campaigns too? Like who exactly is doing the research and absorbing the message?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the key things that we need to look at. So that's a great question, because one of the things that you need to look at when you're creating strategy is who is the influencer.
Right.
Latinos make decisions as a group, as a family. They don't make decisions individually. And they take in consideration everybody or the member. Yeah, the mom or the dad at the end will be actually saying, this is what we're going to do. But everybody actually has something to say, and everybody else has a point of view or something to contribute to the decision. And depending on what you're buying or what are you looking at, the influencer could be the second generation or third generation. Second of it is, they might be able, the persons to actually to help. See, first, second generations, specifically for a segment of the population, the Latino population, who actually are less educated and don't speak English. The second generations are the ones who help their parents transact in the States. Either speak for them, translate for them, help them in many different ways. The same thing is happening online. They are becoming the digital Sherpas. So parents will go and ask them for favors to help them with technology, to help them with search, to help them to do. So they might be one of the influencers. And that's, you know, coming back to that, it is who is helping also ignite the thought, right, on the process.
That has to wreak havoc with your demographics. Because, you know, so say you're selling insurance and your target audience is 45 to 65, you go into the lack, but the people who actually are doing the research might be, you know, right, in their 20s.
Right.
Exactly. So that message is different, right? The message we want to say is this is not insurance for you. You're doing it for your dad. You're doing it for your uncle. You're doing it for, right? And this is why are the important things that you actually need to bring up to him. To make a decision.
If you expose that awareness, is that okay? Like if your marketing message is actually help your, you know, is as bald-faced as, you know, help your parents figure out insurance or, you know, something of that nature. Is that too subtle or is that?
You will do it more subtle.
Yeah. Okay. That's so, what I thought.
For example, I'll give you an example. We were looking at the flu campaign. We were looking at the three different generations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll take the flu because H1N1 was a completely different strategy. But the flu vaccine is already a well-known product and is a seasonal behavior change. So part of the strategy was not to let them know, just as a reminder, and why they should do this, right? What is the reason that the flu is so important? To be able to do that. So that campaign was, I do it for you.
Yeah.
Hmm. Right.
Which ties into the community aspect.
Right. I'm vaccinating myself for you.
Yeah.
You know, to keep you safe.
Yeah.
I'm vaccinating, you know, and and this goes back to the budget. It is, how is that you can talk to a group, right, to their specific needs when there's no budget? Right. There's not a certain amount of budget. So it is what it is that you combine, what it is that you select. And we were talking, and we did like a 3-4 personas, and we were targeted the different ages and the different demographics and generations based on that message. And we tweaked the message. We adapted the message to reflect the interests of, and in general, the campaign was, we'll do it for you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And how do you measure the effectiveness of these campaigns? I'm just thinking back to all the federal campaigns I've been exposed to and how many times they translate to all the different languages. And I'm just kind of curious, how do you measure whether it would work? I mean, you sort of mentioned the Zika. There was clearly a moment where they measured and they knew it wasn't working, which is why you got to talk to people and pivot, right? Mm-hmm. So how did that come about? Were they doing surveys, phone surveys or something?
Yeah, we were doing phone surveys. But one of the things that we did was two things. Remember, actually, the campaign specifically in Puerto Rico was to be able to remind people to do a behavior, right? And one of the behaviors was actually use repellent. And so in order for them to remind them actually to use repellent, we put lead ads on the aisle repairing in grocery stores, right? And some of the stores were actually community stores where actually they used to go every day or every week. And work with them to measure what was the uplift on the self-repellent before the campaign and after the campaign. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Okay. And so then specific behavior. Self-
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we also measure the intent. We actually work with Google to do a brand lift intent of certain messages. And we did it. We did the search not only for a YouTube campaign, a video campaign, but also for search in Google and see what was, you know, exactly what did change? Did it actually change something, or people were searching more because of what we were doing? And we saw a lift. We saw actually a significant lift on the purchase intent and the awareness and the intent of using repellents. And then we compared that with sales. Right. We did a quarter to quarter and a year to year repellent sales and see where it was and where were some of the gaps. So, for example, one of the gaps that we saw overall, we saw repellent sales, you know, repellent actually lift about 15% from the previous year. That is year to year. And then on the stores where we didn't put any signs because we were not, for any reason, we were not able to actually be there, we saw their sales go down. Whereas the stores were actually, we put the signs as a reminder, their sales were up.
So Javier, you've been great. This has been a fantastic conversation.
So how can people learn more about you if they want to connect with you?
Well, they can call me. Let me give you, I don't even remember my business number. You know, or email me. The number is 410-989-5484. They can look me at LinkedIn, Facebook page, Emergent Element, Instagram, Emergent Element, Twitter, Javier VW, or just go to my website.
And what's your website address again?
EmergentElement.com.
Thank you so much. This has been awesome. Super enlightening. I think a lot of my fellow marketer friends are probably not targeting this market, or maybe occasionally getting pinged about targeting this market in a way that's not very savvy. So I really appreciate it. I learned a lot today.
Well, on that note, just to put some statistics to this, and I know you probably already know this, right? It is that, you know, growth within the Latino community or the U.S. population from 2010, 2018, 50% of the growth of the U.S. population actually is because of Latinos.
Wow.
Wow.
And then if they are thinking about, because this could be one of the barriers or challenges, is why should we target with them, right? To put in a perspective, it is like targeting the economies of Canada or Mexico.
Right.
Because they have 17 million purchasing power, their Latino market.
Yeah, 17 million people. And what was it, 20% more likely to spread your brand message?
No, it's not a 20% more likely to spread your message. It is, they speak 20 times more about a brand than the general market.
Yeah. And you said 70 million, right?
Yeah, let me double check on this because actually am I where I had in my notes. Yeah, no, it's what's all, sorry, it's 1.7 trillion spending power.
Wow. So it's dollars. Yeah.
1.7 trillion spending power, which actually is the, you know, is similar to the economy of Canada or Mexico.
Yeah.
Right. So if you're going to go into any of those markets, you have one here at home.
Yep. Right.
Yep. That's right. Why set up a satellite office in Canada when you can just market to a different community in the United States and get just as much bang for your buck, if not more. That is excellent proselytization for your cause.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is, and it couldn't be more timely, frankly, because I think that one of, you know, joking aside about, you know, some of the events that have been happening in the country over the last 5 years, I think part of what's happened is an activation of the Latinx community that, you know, that it is driving them to demand more and expect more. And, you know, given the fact that they're, you know, they're growing in prominence throughout the country, it's no longer going to be a question of whether or not you should. It's going to be a question of you must. And I think that's really becoming obvious.
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things that one of the prompts that actually you asked me is why the shift? There are mainly two reasons: demographics and purchasing power. I mean, right now we're 16 million Latinos in the U.S. Right? It was 1 in 5 is a Latino, and soon it's becoming 1 in 4.
Right.
And you know, for Generation Z, we're at 25%. Whereas the growth of the general market, as a matter of fact, is zero.
Right.
Right. You know, the growth in Latino population has been 52%.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, is and not only that, it is we're a different stage, you know, a different life stage. Is a younger population. The actually median age is 26.
Wow.
So where do you, if you're marketing to someone that already have, let's talk about not only health, but let's talk about your lifestyle, your lifestyles and the materials that you need, houses, cars, comforts. You want to actually target people who is changing your, you know, their different life stages, the different growth stages. You know, someone who actually is going down that, you know, is more likely to look for other things and experiences. Right?
Right.
Right.
Yep.
Thanks so much for listening.
To find out more about our podcast and what we are up to, go to digitalmarketingvictories.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please, if you like what you hear, spread the word. Rate us, comment, and share.
We're always looking for new topics, ideas, and guests. So if you have suggestions, please go to our website or email us at questions@digitalmarketingvictories.com.
And thanks for listening.